say she never cared and that she never will. Do it all again, I guess I'll have to wait until then. And if I get drunk, well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. You won't bother me no more. And if I'm drinking, well, you know that you're my friend, and I'll say, I think I'll have myself a beer. She called me late last night, say she loved me so. But I guess you changed her mind. Well, I should have known it wouldn't be alright. But I can't live without her, so I won't even try. If I catch so well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. If you're drinking, well, you know that you're my friend, and I'm saying, I think I'll have myself a beer. Someday I'll think of what you say. Maybe next time I'll remember what you do.
Cybersecurity, there's a ton of content out there, and if you don't know where to start, it can be overwhelming, even paralyzing. So let's fix that. Welcome to Simply Cyber, a community of tens of thousands of aspiring and active cybersecurity professionals focused on networking, knowledge sharing, and professional development. I'm Dr. Gerald Osher, Chief Content Creator at Simply Cyber, inviting you to get the answers to your cybersecurity problems with hundreds of cybersecurity videos answering your frequently asked questions, interviewing industry experts, and live streaming daily cyber threat briefings hosted by me. Now get the stories and insights you won't find anywhere else. Hit subscribe now and dig into all the fresh content on the channel and in the community. Nothing should stop you from launching and leveling up your cybersecurity career today.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the party. How you doing? We're going to do it sans script. Oh, let me put the actual correct. Welcome to the party, pal. Good morning. Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Working through some production issues live on stream. No big deal. Don't have a script in front of me, so we're going to be doing it from memory. Although it's pretty much the same thing every day. And at this point, I know some of you know it by heart all the same. Good morning. Today is March 21st, it's episode 583 of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief, and I am your host, Dr. Gerald Osher, and over the next 45 minutes, me, you, Kimberly Can Fix It, Casually Joseph, Jesse Johnson live from the bed, Nerman, Jason Summers, Marcus Kyler, and the Yeet Crew, you know it, folks over on LinkedIn like Logan Fuller, Vladimir Rodriguez, hashtag Team SC, wherever you're coming from, we're happy to have you here, and we've got a great show for you. We're going to be covering the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be giving my expert opinion and analysis on each of those stories on what it means to you as a practitioner. So how can you use this information to drive cyber risk reduction for your business stakeholders? And if you're new to the industry or looking to break in, don't sweat that this show isn't for you. You might be like, oh my God, I'm kind of a poser. Oh, I'm just a passive observer. No, get involved. If you're looking to be part of this community, that is a choice that you can make. And guess what? Once you make it, you're part of the community. If you're you're graduating this summer from college, you're getting out of the military soon, whatever it is, welcome to the party, pal. You will be asked in any job interview, how do you stay current on cybersecurity topics and trends? This right here is a banger of an answer. Super excited. Just so everybody knows, I do not prep or research any of the stories. And it seems like a new trend that's happening. I didn't even see the story topics or headlines or anything because even with the Chiron running below, I didn't read that because I'm working through production issues. Because we wear multiple hats in cybersecurity, and we wear multiple hats on the production side. So giddy up on that. Before we get into the show, I do want to say shout out and thanks to the stream sponsors, starting with my good friend Eric Taylor of Barricade Cyber Solutions. Barricade Cyber Solutions is dedicated to helping businesses from cyber attacks and recover from the damage done. Cyber attacks can cause massive issues for businesses and send dedicated, hardworking business owners into turmoil. I'm talking grab a bottle of the pink stuff, CEO, because it's a hot mess express. But don't worry. Barricade Cyber Solutions knows how to mitigate the damage done. Eric Taylor knows how to yeet out threat actors. Casually Joseph knows how to tell a threat actor, catch him outside. How about that?
Catch me outside. How about that?
So go to barricadecyber.com, bookmark it, and be ready when the time comes if you need to get incident response and help a threat actor. Giddy up on out of here. Uh-oh. The lip syncing's off. My video is off. I'll just do this for the stream. I also want to say shout out to Panopsi. Get a partner who understands your cybersecurity program and your business goals. Panopsi Security can do staff augmentation. It can do, you know, enterprise level strategic programs. Basically, if you need help with your information security program, like let's say that you're a one-person shop, right? Like you're responsible for IT or you're an MSP for small businesses and you're just like, Jesus, a lot of people are asking about security and I don't have time or the knowledge to be able to do this. I've been told about frameworks. What the heck is NIST CSF 2.0? Like, should I be using it? I don't know. This is where Panopsi comes in. Think of them as VCSOs, consultants, subject matter experts, whatever you want. They can help you level up your security program quickly because they have the knowledge and the experience to apply it. That's the deal, all right? Panopsi.com. Say hi to Brandon Poole if you connect to them. Huge, huge fan of Brandon Poole. All right, and also Anti-Siphon Training, but more about them at the mid-roll. Guys, it's Thursday, which means it's What's Your Meme Thursday, and our own Haircut Fish, a.k.a. Dan Reardon, in chat right now, makes a custom meme every single Thursday for the channel, for the stream, for the community. And today's a great one. It's a callback to something that happened earlier in the week. So get up on that. All right. So let me ask: is my audio and video out of sync with each other? If it is, you know, we're just gonna roll with it because that's how we roll. But doing the best I can. Oh my God. Not a deep fake. I got a job. 3 exclamation points. It's a place local to me. 22 people. Cyber focused. I came in like a wreck. Yes, sir. Not a deep fake. Coming in hot, buddy. Congratulations. Straight crush it. If you want to take it to the next level, not a deep fake. I do have a video on the channel on how to crush your first 90 days at work. So if you like, don't let up off the gas, not a deep fake. But like, if anything, push the clutch down and shift into fifth gear and then put the pedal to the floor. Let's go, man. Super pumped. We're going to give you a double wrecking ball on that one. Super pumped. Can't wait for other people's announcements of breaking in. Super cool. All right, guys. Each episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Brief is worth half a CPE. So say what's up in chat, grab a screenshot, file it away, and get those CPEs. If it's your first episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Brief, and is this your first time catching the show? If it is, we have a special emote for you. We have a special sound effect. We love welcoming new people to the community, believe me. So say what's up in chat by simply saying hashtag first timer. If it's your first time, hashtag first timer in chat. And let us do our thing with welcoming you with open arms and our welcome to the party, pal, sound effect and emote. I'm going to preemptively do it right now for you first timers who are being a little shy. If you're being shy, we'll give you the emote and the sound effect now as a down payment on you dropping a hashtag first timer.
Welcome to the party, pal.
All you first timers, welcome to the party, pal. We're so happy to have you here. And we got jawjacking with BSEC later on after the stream. So stay tuned for that. But right now, do me a favor, everybody. Get your cup of coffee. It is Thursday. So I'm all Citadel'd out here with my Citadel mug and my Citadel shirt, my Citadel haircut. And sit back, relax, and let's let the cool sounds of the hot news wash over us in an awesome wave. I will see all of you at the mid-roll.
From the CISO series, it's cybersecurity headlines.
These are the cybersecurity headlines for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. I'm Rich Straffolino. U.S. plans water sector cybersecurity task force. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced it will seek to form this task force as a way to create an immediate solution to threats against the water system. The task force will look to create industry-wide best practices and look to address systemic vulnerabilities. This group will also consider recommendations from an upcoming meeting of state environmental, health, and homeland security secretaries on March 21st. EPA Administrator Michael Reagan noted that right now, even cybersecurity basics aren't being followed in this industry, with software left unpatched and passwords kept on factory defaults.
Yeah, all of that is right. Somebody get Justin Gold in chat. Justin Gold, our resident water water critical infrastructure homeboy. Rex dropping a five-month announcement. Rex, thanks for the squad membership and continued support. I went to Simply Cyber for 5 months and all I got was this awesome community. All right, guys, couple of things jump out off the page to me on this one. One, if you didn't know, there are Iranian threat actors. Muddy Waters is one. And even though the word water is in their name, Muddy Water is not actively targeting wastewater and water treatment facilities in the United States. It's killing me right now. There is a threat actor group that is targeting that. We've seen, we've seen different ones. China has jumped in there a little bit. Obviously, they mentioned Iran in the story itself. There are some for-profit ransomware threat actor groups that have been targeting, wastewater. Guys, here's the deal. Okay, one, every single county in the country, every single county in the United States. And very likely, like parallel there is for land allocation for society in Canada, UK, Australia. I don't know what they call it, right? I'm not going to assume that you guys call it towns and counties and stuff. They probably have more interesting names. But no matter where you are, wherever there is human settlement, unless you're living off the grid, like you're like one of these Alaska people living below zero or north of 30 or whatever that show's called, and you have like your own well or something, most people have a water facility that supports their municipality, right? So the reason I'm pointing it out is a lot of people don't think about the water sector because it's just you flush the toilet and it fills with water. You turn on the sink and water pops out, right? But it's an imperative, critical piece of infrastructure that's required. And so there's huge, huge attack surface for adversaries of the United States and, or for wherever you are, right? And they're not really well-funded. Cities and municipalities, you got to remember, they are not for-profit. Like literally, they're trying to break even every single year. And everybody complains about taxes. Oh my God, the taxes. Like, oh, Uncle Sam. And people are like, oh, I pay your bill. I pay your paycheck, policeman. Like when they get pulled over and talking smack. But like, dude, paying for your water, the water that comes out, that's part of the deal. So anyways, because of this huge attack surface and because of the lack of funding to fund actual IT staff and cybersecurity staff to properly manage the risk associated with this tech stack, you get things like this, where unpatched systems are all over the place. Default credentials are all over the place, right? And it's a problem. Now, yes, there has been a focused effort. Obama, going way back to Obama, passed the critical infrastructure security bill or executive order 13636. And then this is where NIST CSF, Cybersecurity Framework 1, came from to protect critical infrastructure. If you've been following me, you know that it's since expanded to any organization with the 2.0. But this is the whole thing. We've known about this. Like, this is what pisses me off, okay? This is 2024, and this is in the news, but Obama was in office when we knew this was a problem. water and dams were identified as critical infrastructure back in like the 2000s, right? So, you know what I mean? Like, what are we doing here? So the other thing that jumps off the plate is the EPA. I get that the EPA is involved with environmental stuff and like not dumping oil into like, you know, water runoff things and everything. But this to me is a CISA action. This is not an EPA action, but you know what? All hands on deck, whoever the director of the EPA is, grab a bucket, bro, and start bailing out the boat too. I don't care. All hands on deck. Like, I'm not going to throw shade at the EPA and be like, yeah, you're really a little bit out of your element, sir. Because I'll take it. I'll take anything I can get, right? So we'll see where this goes. You know, we just talked yesterday about, you know, the government's pushing down executive orders around minimum security standards. So we'll see. But Justin, like, if Justin Gold's in chat, like, here's my thing. This is fine, and this is action, or excuse me, this is like policy and everything like that. But tell me when this takes action. You can wave a finger and point to the problem. Ooh, like, we're not patching your stuff. But like, when does this turn into action? When does a municipality in Yellowknife, you know, Saskatchewan, and I know this is United States, but I wanted to work a Yellowknife reference in here. When does Yellowknife actually go and patch their device? When does Onwassa in Jacksonville, North Carolina patch their server? Like, when does the action actually happen? Words and policy are fine, but it's just theater unless you take action. And if you don't take action, then what the hell's the point? You're still exposed to risk. This is my biggest problem, y'all. My biggest problem is we have this massive attack surface. Everybody knows about it. Everybody wearing a suit or like a really, really expensive blouse or whatever you like to wear to work. The executives, they're like, they nod and point at the problem, but you need to empower staff. You need to make it a priority. You need to take action to actually reduce the attack surface, or else you're going to be talking about it 15 years after the president put an executive order in place that we need to do this. No kidding. You need to do it. Do it. That's my thing. Stop talking and actually do, bro. Jesus.
Loop DOS attack exploits the infinite regress of UDP. Researchers at the CISPA Helmholtz Center for Information Security detailed this new attack vector. Loop DOS targets application layer protocols using UDP to pair servers to communicate with each other indefinitely, effectively creating a crippling loop. Because UDP does not validate IP addresses, an attacker can forge UDP packets with a target IP address to initiate the attack. The researchers estimate roughly 300,000 hosts using vulnerable solutions from Broadcom, Cisco, Honeywell, Microsoft, and Zyzel remain online. With that being said, no evidence of exploitation in the wild.
All right. Blah, 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 blah. All right. So here's a couple of things. One, this is a denial of service attack. Okay. Using UDP. Remember, UDP is user datagram protocol. You really don't need to know the acronym, by the way. Like, everybody just says UDP. The key thing with UDP is that it's connectionless, right? So TCP, we do the three-way handshake and establish a connection on how packets are going to travel. That way you always get them, okay? And then UDP doesn't care. It just sends it. If you get it, cool. If you don't, F it. Who cares? And what I always tell, and this is like basically for everybody that is not an IT or network person in chat, you should understand TCP for sure. Like, if you heard about the TCP IP protocol or TCP IP stack, it's important to understand it. It's like a critical piece of networking. But don't sleep on UDP. And just really quickly, the way I always convey this to students is think of UDP, like, because most people are like, well, why would you ever not want connection full? With TCP, if I send you an email, I want to make sure that you get the full email, right? Like, we need integrity that you receive the message. So that's TCP. With UDP, if I'm streaming season 3 of the new Wheel of Time on Amazon Prime, right? Or, you know, whatever, Breaking Bad or whatever, choose your favorite show, right? And packets are firing off, streaming service, right? And then a packet gets lost or dropped or whatever. You don't need that packet anymore because you're already on to the next you know, second of video, right? So it doesn't make sense to resend it. And how you actually visualize this, if you've ever had like crappy network traffic, or you're like watching on your phone and you travel through kind of a dead spot and the video gets pixelated, that is, you're directly seeing UDP packets not being sent fully. That's why it's getting pixelated, because it's losing some of the data in transit from the streaming server at Netflix to your device on your phone. And it's showing what it can, but that's what the pixelated stuff is. Okay. All right. Let's go back to this. So this is a novel loop attack, which is interesting, by the way, because most successful denial of service attacks in 2024 are actually amplification attacks, right? Which you can Google like Memcache amplification attack, and you'll see like what that is. You don't see a lot of traditional denial of service attacks. This one, basically what happens is it's an application layer attack, which is funny because UDP is at the transport layer, but this is an application layer attack. And effectively, vulnerable systems, you can send a request to one of the systems and you spoof your IP address as the source IP. Again, this is probably more difficult to say without visuals, but when you send a network packet, you have to have a source IP and a destination IP, right? It's like sending a letter. Like you have your return address in the left corner and you have who you're sending it to on the main. Well, there's no reason that you can't change the source address and spoof it and say you're actually the victim's IP address, okay? So then when you send the request to the destination, it says, okay, I've got the packet. I'm going to respond. Who do I respond to? I respond to the victim. Okay, this is so a harken back to yesteryear's denial of service attacks. If someone can correct me in chat or fact check me, I'm almost positive this is a, there was an attack called a Smurf attack back in the day where you would request, you'd like do a broadcast request on a network segment, but you would change the source IP to your victim. And when you broadcast on a network, all of the recipients that get the thing respond with their MAC address to the victim IP. Basically, you would do a broadcast to say like, who's on this network? And they all respond. And that way you can populate your ARP table. But if you put your victim in there, you're like, who's on the network? And then the victim just gets slammed with this. This sounds a lot like that. And those kind of Smurf attacks, teardrop attacks, ping of death things, like those are all yesteryear. Like you'll read them about them in a history book. Or if you've taken any of my classes, you read about them there too. So this is interesting that this is there. If I had to guess, this is an application layer issue, which means you should be able to patch this.
You gotta patch it.
Yes. So Smurf is a distributed denial using ICMP. So I am mistaken on that. Maybe I'm thinking of a teardrop attack then. There's definitely an attack that is just like this from like history, right? So basically it gets into an infinite loop. If you've ever had a microphone on and then you like jump into the Zoom meeting with your phone, and you get like that feedback loop where it starts building on top of itself and getting louder, and like you get the feedback noise. That's essentially what this is. Again, if I had to guess, this is going to be fixed with an application patch to basically not allow this type of activity to come through, period, full stop. So at a minimum, this is, see how it says it doesn't validate the source IP, making it susceptible to IP spoofing. That's the deal. Okay. I wouldn't sweat this. I mean, this is worth looking at from a student perspective, or as Justin Gold says in chat, CCNA prep. But at the application layer, just make sure that your apps are patched and your devices are patched. They mention Zixel and other NAS devices. So this is a straight up, yay, you gotta patch it.
You gotta patch it.
Also, fun fact, that's my voice, that you gotta patch it sound effect. That's my voice from somewhere. A long time ago, I think Base Case cut that. I was talking to Deb Wigley yesterday, and she's like, I love that sound effect. I'm like, that's me. She's like, no way. So if you didn't know, now you know.
GitHub tool uses AI to fix vulnerabilities.
Of course.
GitHub launched a beta of this code scanning autofix feature for GitHub Advanced Security customers. This uses its existing Copilot AI engine, along with its CodeQL semantic engine, to find and fix security vulnerabilities in real time. Language support at launch includes JavaScript, Java, Python, and TypeScript. The company claims the new feature can fix two-thirds of found vulnerabilities. In use, the feature will provide an explanation of the issue detected and steps needed to remediate it, if not automatically done.
All right, couple things. One, shout out to DJ Manny pointing out that Smurf is ICMP and Fraggle is UDP, so Fraggle Attack. And for those who grew up in the early 80s, Fraggle Rock was like kind of like the Muppets meets Sesame Street-ish. Fraggle Rock was almost like the GoBots. Like it was like a poor man's. Like GoBots was like a poor man's Transformers, and Fraggle Rock was like a poor man's Muppets. But you know, they went for it. I liked it. Also, I need to issue a correction. Those sound effects were actually cut by DJ BSEC, not Basecase. So you know, Basecase is awesome, but it was actually BSEC. So we got to give love where love is due. All right, let's get to the stories. GitHub's latest AI tool.
Shall we play a game?
All right. Love it. Love it. Love it. Automatically fixing code vulnerabilities. Okay. Here's the deal. Like anything else, guys, AI is a tool in the toolbox. It's not going to replace us. It's not going to, I mean, maybe it will one day, but like right now it's a tool in the toolbox. And like any other profession, what I would say is, and by the way, just as a quick aside, this is why the NVIDIA CEO saying that you don't need to learn programming anymore is ridiculous. This tool can help you fix code and, you know, basically auto fix it, find security vulnerabilities and clean it up. Awesome. Go for it. 100%. This is the power of AI. In my opinion, you should be able to drop code in something or drop a drop an email. Grammarly, for example, already does this with your email. Drop a content of your email in and then say, hey, write this email more assertively or write this email more empathetically or write this email from the perspective of the recipient. Okay, here we go. Cut it up. Okay, now you rinse and review. This is awesome. We already have a hot mess express of open source software security vulnerabilities, right? Log4j, threat actors are taking over abandoned GitHubs and putting code in there. We've seen accidentally GitHub repos be made public when they shouldn't be. I'm not 100% sure if that's how SolarWinds really early on SolarWinds happened, where it was exposed publicly for a hot minute before they started getting into the CI/CD pipeline. But my point here is, this isn't going to fix some of those problems I just outlined, but this is going to make the code more secure, less, you know, buffer overflows, less, you know, like ability to call a function that you shouldn't be able to access. Also, they didn't say it in the story, but I would be surprised if this tool didn't also call out like, hey, it looks like, you know, like Clippy used to, like, hey, it looks like you've got a secret in the source code. Are you sure you want to publish this publicly, like an API key or a commented out credential or something like that? So I like this. I think this is cool. This should be no surprise to anybody. Microsoft Copilot is all up in Visual Studio's face, I'm pretty sure. And GitHub is from Microsoft, and GitHub is one of the largest online code repository repo things in the world. So why wouldn't it? Okay. Why was it ever called a Smurf attack? So Space Tacos asked that question. I do not know the origin story of the Smurf attack, but if I had to speculate, and we can Google this in a minute, I will Google it, but I'm going to take a stab at it, Space Tacos. I believe it was called a Smurf attack because Smurfs lived in mushrooms, right? This is my guess. Smurfs lived in mushrooms. And this attack basically mushrooms up. Like it starts small and then it just starts expanding like a mushroom would, right? The stem and then the expansion. So that's what's up. Also, shout out to Black Hills Information Security. It sounds like we've got representation in the house. All right, let's go.
Cato Networks eyes IPO. Reuters sources say the Israeli cybersecurity firm hired underwriters as part of its plan for an initial public offering. currently valued at over $3 billion. Cato reportedly hopes to raise over $500 million with an IPO in early 2025. The company currently holds over 2,200 enterprise customers and disclosed it saw 59% annual revenue growth last year. This IPO could reflect easing equity capital markets and serve as a bellwether for other cybersecurity startups.
All right. Couple things here. Like, what does this company do? That's what I want to know. Cato, what does Cato do? Like, this story doesn't say anything except they're getting straight cash, homie, and they're about to go public. So I guess I'll share a couple things here. Nice job, Reuters, but like, this is a cybersecurity story on the surface, but this is actually a financial analyst story. If you go like an inch deep, if you scratch this, this is not a cyber story. Okay. So what I will distill out of this story is a couple things. One, Cato Networks is out of Israel. If you didn't know, Israel, small country, massively awesome at information security. Okay. If you see a technology coming out of Israel, you should assume it's awesome until proven otherwise. Okay. And I know because of ridiculous, discrimination in the world and all these things. Some people I've literally worked with Israeli companies and they've told me, hey, don't tell anyone that we're Israeli backed. Like, we appear like we're coming out of California, because we don't want to deal with discrimination. I'm like, okay, but like that's where we're at. But I'm telling you, Israel is dope at information security. NSO Group, I'm pretty sure, I mean, love them or hate them for what Pegasus is doing, I'm pretty sure they're Israeli based. Palo Alto came from Israel. Checkpoint, Israel. Like, Israel is awesome. Okay. So Cato Networks coming from Israel, instant credibility. Secondly, the guy who's running Cato, they have 2,200 enterprise customers. That's a solid book of business. Their revenue is worth, they've got $3 billion in funding. Here is the, besides the fact that I think Israeli-based cybersecurity companies are awesome, what I want to tease out of here is the fact that Reddit is getting IPO'd or will be. This firm, billions of dollars, getting IPO'd. This to me, right, is an indicator of healthy markets and healthy economy, right? We're talking about contraction, inflation happening, job layoffs. Like, if people with money are taking the money and investing it instead of hoarding it because of recession and all that stuff, like, this wouldn't happen. So the fact that these companies are popping and there's a healthy growth in the, VC area and stuff like that, this is a great sign for the economy. Okay. Asterisk right here. I'm not a financial analyst. I try to avoid talking politics and all that stuff, but money talks, guys. Okay. Remember when I was flipping out a minute ago about the water story and like, oh, you a lot of finger wagging, but not a lot of action. This is action. This is putting your money where your mouth is. And to me, this is a great sign for markets and stuff like that. Also, really quickly, I want to point out, if what I just said is it minimum at all interesting to you, there's a guy named Mike Prevett. He's a CISO out of London. I'm friends with Mike. I think Mike is wicked awesome. He actually has this newsletter that is literally exclusively focused on financials and financial analysis of cybersecurity companies. So this is a cybersecurity newsletter, but it's looking at it from the financial perspective. I'm going to drop a link in chat. It's really cool, worth checking out at a minimum, but it's pretty niche. Okay. All right, let's go.
And now a word from our sponsor, Vanta. From dozens of spreadsheets and screenshots to fragmented tools and manual security reviews, managing the requirements for modern compliance and security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta is the leading trust management platform that helps you centralize your efforts to establish trust and enable growth across your organization. Over 6,000 companies partner with Vanta to automate compliance, strengthen security posture, streamline security reviews, and reduce third-party risk. To learn more, go to vanta.com/CISO and watch their 3-minute product demo. That's vanta.com/CISO.
All right. Guess what? It's the mid-roll. Do we have any first-timers in chat? Because, hold on. What do we got here? Johnny Five got the C-panel and WHM sysadmin cert. Headed to the cloud. Way to go, Johnny Five. Keeping Thailand on lock right now, Johnny Five. Way to go, man. Super pumped for you. Guys, if it's your first time, love it, love it, love it. If you're a regular like Alpha Sierra, you know what we're about to drop on this thing. Good morning, Eric Silberman. Hey, welcome to the mid-roll. Great to have you here. Having a wonderful show. A little losing my mind on the water story, but that's okay. Guys, if you're getting value from the stream, do me a solid. Hit that like button if you're on YouTube. Don't care about the vanity metrics. What I actually care about is if enough of you hit the like button, YouTube's going to trigger the algorithm and say, hey, there's 407 cyber people in here, and there's other people on YouTube who like cyber. Maybe they like this channel because these 400 people hit the like button. So basically help me hack the YouTube algorithm and help build the Simply Cyber community. Let's get more people in here. Only do it if you're getting value from the stream. If you think this stream is hot trash, do not hit the like button. I want to say shout out and thanks to the stream sponsors, Barricade Cyber, Panopsi, and my friends over at Anti-Siphon Training. Anti-Siphon Training is the training arm of Black Hills Information Security. Wonderful people over there. Anti-Siphon Training is disrupting the traditional cybersecurity training industry. If you are a squad member, drop the Anti-Siphon emote in chat. I'm a squad member, so I will be doing it right now. Ding, 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 ding. Anti-Siphon is disrupting the traditional cybersecurity training industry by providing high quality, cutting edge education to anyone, regardless of financial position. What does that mean? That means you get to practice skills that are actually, you know, in demand, learn what is taught, get hands on keyboard, and do it in a fun, engaging environment. If you like the way chat's going on over here, it's basically what happens with the student body during one of these courses. And if you're taking John Strand's, getting started right here with InfoSec and Black Hills MITRE ATT&CK, then please drop a comment in chat, and because you know what's up with how good this stuff is. But go to antisiphontraining.com, click on training, go to pay what you can training in the dropdown, and check out the upcoming courses. Also, quick shout out. It looks like Eric Capuano and Whitney Champion are going to be doing a Velociraptor training really quickly. Velociraptor is an open source tool for basically not threat. They say threat hunting, but you can use Velociraptor to like carve out artifacts from endpoints and stuff. It's super cool. Eric and Whitney are both like ninja blue teamers, so they're awesome to learn from. Thank you, Anti-Siphon. All right, guys, Simply Cyber Community Challenge. If you didn't see it already, Monica Nunez dropped her story into LinkedIn. Go over to LinkedIn, search for the hashtag Simply Cyber Community Challenge. You can see it at the bottom there. And connect with the people posting. Connect with Monica Nunez. She's worked at Navy Federal for like 10 years as a fraud investigator. She probably has some of the most crazy stories ever. Connect with her, right? Why not build your professional network with like-minded people? John Strand gave me a shout out at the class. Awesome. John Strand, such a classy guy. Monica Nunez, please tag somebody in chat with the baton. We would love to hear somebody else's story. If Monica Nunez is in chat, if not, somebody volunteer for the baton. But don't be shy. Go on LinkedIn, search for this hashtag, and connect with the community. You will be happy if you do it. Now, every single day of the week is got a special segment, and Thursdays is What's Your Meme Thursday. We talked about the Catalonia region in Spain on Maine where being attacked by Pegasus software, and I said the Catalina wine mixer. So Haircut Fish went ahead and put me in Step Brothers. So if you know, you know. Prestige Worldwide coming at you, bro. All right, thank you so much, Haircut Fish, and thank you to all of you for being here and enjoying what is one of my favorite parts of the day. All right, guys, let's get back to work and keep crushing it. Here we go.
A rash of misconfigured Google Firebase sites. a trio of security researchers going by the pseudonyms Mr. Ba, Zyziva, and Logic published details on 842 misconfigured Google Firebase instances, leaking almost 125 million user records, including plaintext passwords and billing information. This started by finding a flaw in the AI-based hiring system Chatter AI, which allowed them to access retail food sites from Applebee's, KFC, Subway, Taco Bell, and more through misconfigurations earlier this year. From there, the researchers developed a scanner to find similar misconfigurations. The group contacted impacted sites. 24% fixed the misconfiguration when the researchers published findings, and 2 even offered bug bounties.
Wow. Okay. So, all right, a couple of things here. The major takeaway here is if you're using Firebase in your environment and you allow Firebase to make configurations, and I'm not even really familiar. I've used Firebase, but I forget why. Firebase, Google's mobile and web app dev platform. Okay, so this is for devs. If you're using Firebase in your environment, you should absolutely pay attention to this. It allows for easy misconfiguration of security rules. So the immediate action that you should be taking as a cyber practitioner is making sure that whatever like control you need to put in place to minimize the ability for Firebase to introduce misconfigurations, also potentially do a audit of your current configuration to make sure that you're not actively exposed. Again, I don't research these stories, so I can't get into deeper context of like what you should be looking for. I'll drop this link in chat. The other thing I want to point out, and I think that this is absolutely massive value, so please, pay attention to this particular part. I don't typically ask for that, but this one's pretty important. This is a really interesting, well-written blog post from a security researcher, and it basically appears to be outlining kind of their mental workflow of discovering and probing and then exploiting this vulnerability. So a lot of times when you get a vulnerability disclosure, there might be not a lot of detail in it, or it's just the final thing. And honestly, it kind of gives the misrepresentation that like the person who did the discovery is like some next level ninja. And make no mistake, some of the security researchers out there are next level ninjas, right? Tom Nom Nom, very impressive. Jason Haddock's very impressive. But at some point, you do have to go through the workflow. There are rabbit holes you go down that turn into nothing. There are mistakes made. And unfortunately, a lot of times in our industry, you don't see the professional making those mistakes. You just see them like, you know, Bruce Almighty on the keyboard and then popping out like a zero day or popping out some like multi-$100,000 bug bounty. And it feels like intimidating. But I'm telling you, there is work being done. There are mistakes being made. And this blog post reads like that. See, attempt one, and here's what they did. And here's where the challenges they found out. Oh, like when they do more than 500 threads with this custom Python scanner they wrote, it chews up too much memory. So what do? We change the scanner in Go, which manages memory a lot better. So for me personally, this is an awesome... This is an awesome look into the actual work that happens from going from concept to proof of concept to execution to discovery to disclosure. Like this is a really, really cool blog post, and it really shows that workflow. So I'm going to drop it in chat one more time, and shout out to these researchers for doing this. Mr. Bra, Ike's Ziva, and Logic, I guess, maybe. All right, let's go.
Ransomware takedowns create market opportunities. GuidePoint Security published findings about how recent high-profile ransomware group takedowns by law enforcement...
Whoa, hold on one second. Sorry to interrupt the story, but community comes first. Brian Bates has an interview at 9:30, sending good vibes to Brian Bates live in chat right now.
Impacted the overall ransomware as a service industry. It found that the biggest long-term impact might be creating distrust between operators and their affiliates. This distrust is fueled when groups like Alv executed an exit scam after an affiliate successfully attacked United Healthcare. In an effort to gain affiliate trust, new ransomware startups increasingly offer more generous revenue splits, access to more revenue infrastructure, things like negotiating teams, eliminating upfront fees, and even letting affiliates keep ransoms from the start and then pay the operator after collection.
All right. So this is really interesting. So this news article cites this blog post. So to me, you know, I appreciate it. Dark reading. I think dark reading, by the way, no one asked me, but I think dark reading is a incredibly reputable information security journalism source, right? So if something comes through dark reading, it's like pre-approved by me as like super legit, super awesome. But in this particular instance, they're citing this story in this report, this blog. So I would definitely read this. The ransomware industry is a blight. It's a blight, right? It's been around for years. It's definitely the number one threat to businesses. Don't sleep on business email compromise. That's the sleepy number two issue. But number one is ransomware. Everybody talks about ransomware. Ransomware threat actors have the most colorful names. I've heard Flaming Donkey has been coming on strong in the ransomware scene. But this isn't a problem that can be solved with like, oh, just you got to patch it, or oh, like we took out the ringleader or whatever. No, this is like a widespread epidemic, and it requires, you know, multiple types of different approaches to reduce the impact, frankly, right? We talk about cyber resiliency. For a while, it was just having good backups and being able to recover. Threat actors started deleting backups. Then backups got immutable. So then threat actors started doing data exfil so they can make some money, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now law enforcement.
Regulators! Mount up. It was a...
All right. Law enforcement has been busting down doors, right? We saw major threat actor groups get taken down, and including, you know, I guess Lockbit recently, even though they came back. And then some threat actor groups you just see go away, and it might be because they 50 subs, here we go. Eric Taylor dropping love.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep. Thank you, Eric Taylor, and to the 50 new minted squad members, welcome to the party, pal. All right, 100 new squad members coming in hot from Barricade Cyber.
Become best friends. Yep.
There it is. Go ahead and enjoy that. If you are a new squad member, giddy up in that squad emo tray. You got to be on YouTube to get it. And thank you to Eric Taylor and Barricade Cyber. So the TLDR here is it's going to take a very dynamic, a very complicated solution to root out ransomware. But I'm loving this. All of this law enforcement action has basically sowed distrust within the ecosystem. And like any other business, frankly, or market, remember, this is just a business. Ransomware is just a business. It is criminal and it is deplorable. But at the end of the day, it literally is just a business. And we're seeing now that threat actor groups are having to compete with each other in order to woo affiliates to come use their service. Think of like a Middle Eastern bazaar, and every booth and stand is like a ransomware threat actor. And they're like, we've got the highest percentage payouts. And another one's like, we've got reliable code to deploy. And another one's like, we use Telegram to communicate. So like, they're literally trying to compete with each other to get affiliates. The money, the cash, the cash is in the affiliate marketing in the ransomware space because you can scale. Right? As ridiculous as it sounds, threat actors that are not doing ransomware as a service cannot scale and cannot make that fat stacks, right? So affiliate marketing is where it's at in 2024, unfortunately. And with all the different, you know, situations, these ransomware threat actors. So anyways, it's important, very important to know what the current ransomware ecosystem is. I strongly encourage people check this out. If you're interviewing, like Cyber Vega, good luck Cyber Vega with your SkillBridge internship interview today. If you're Brian Bates with your 9:30 interview, Brian, if you can take this report, dump it in ChatGPT and ask for the highlights, and then drop those highlights in the interview, and you would woo people. This report came out yesterday. Dude, if you're in the interview and you're like, hey, yeah, like, did you guys, you know, they ask you a question, you're like, yeah, GuidePoint Security just released a report yesterday that I actually read around the current ransomware ecosystem. And here are three things I found interesting. The people in the interview are going to be like, Last Crusade, drinking from the wrong cup, face melting experience. Believe that. Okay. This is, I'm not saying you've got to read this, but I'm saying it would do you a lot of good to read this.
Flipper Zero Maker responds to potential ban. Last month, the Canadian Industry Ministry proposed a ban on consumer hacking devices, claiming that devices like the popular Flipper Zero are used in car thefts. The Flipper Zero gained popularity as a programmable and extensible pen testing tool with an array of useful radios. Flipper Devices responded to the ban, saying that a ban doesn't reflect how security actually works or how threat actors are really stealing cars, which generally require much more expensive signal repeaters. They also noted that the underlying hardware and functionality of the Flipper Zero is available across a range of single-board computers and Android devices, but that lawmakers unfairly singled out the Flipper Zero.
All right. This is so funny. Canada's going to ban Flipper Zeros, and the people respond with like, you actually don't understand how cybersecurity works, for starters. And secondly, this is not how it's used. All right, so a couple things. Flipper Zero, if you don't know, this is what it looks like. It's like a handheld little radio device that does all sorts of cool stuff. What's his face? Ryan Montgomery, a.k.a. Zero Day, on social media, makes lots of fun little shorts and TikToks using Flipper Zero. That guy's really, really cool. I feel like they're targeting Flipper Zero because it's got a catchy name. It's marketable. It kind of being used as a martyr here to show that the Canadian government is taking a hard stand on, crime and cyber crime and futuristic stuff. This is like a perfect storm. To the point of the story though, there is tons of tools out there that do what Flipper Zeros do. They're just not packaged. They don't have as much interesting, they don't have the rubber grommet that you can rub, like run around it, right? It doesn't have the market share. So first of all, second of all, and to their point, go on YouTube and Google and watch a video of someone actually using a repeater device to steal a car. And that's specifically what they're talking about in the story is car theft. If you watch how to steal a car, again, you can sign up in my course at Threat Actor Academy where we have a whole course on stealing cars. I'm joking. That is not true. But here's the thing. You literally need like a large signal repeater. Like basically the way it works, if you see this, you'll have one guy standing on the porch with a signal repeater trying to interrogate the keys that are typically in a little key tray by the front door. And then the second person is standing by the car with a device that's catching the repeated signal and pushing it, right? So like that's kind of what's going on. Or the guy with the big antenna is catching it and repeating it with that hardware. A Flipper Zero is cute and fun at parties. I have talked to multiple offensive security people. They said that a Flipper Zero is not practical in their toolkit. They do not go on professional engagements with a Flipper Zero. It's more of a fun, it's like a fun party trick or a fun, cool thing to bust out. I've seen people with Flipper Zeros at the bar changing the TV channel. I've seen people with Flipper Zeros, demonstrating that they can stand up like fake APs and stuff like that. But from what I've seen, no one's really using it. So to ban this, okay, like TLDR, for Canada to ban this is a complete PR effort and not actually reducing risk because the technology can be accessed in other ways and it's not even really being used. So like in those capacities of committing crime. Okay.
New Volt Typhoon guidance. This guidance from the Five Eyes agencies follows a CISA advisory on Volt Typhoon activity last month. This advisory warns that APTs successfully access U.S. critical infrastructure systems ranging from communications to transportation and water. The agencies urge critical infrastructure providers to use intelligence-informed prioritization tools for making cybersecurity resourcing decisions, apply known hardening and detection best practices, and ensure continuous training. Because Volt Typhoon doesn't introduce external malware, but instead lives off the LAN once it gains access, it makes basic cybersecurity hygiene practices all the more imperative.
Thank you. Like, welcome to 2024, where cyber hygiene, which is basically the basics. If you go look at CIS 18, which is a phenomenal training wheels framework, like if you don't have anything in place or you're trying to learn, CIS 18 is super, super easy to digest. It's super easy to explain to non-technical people what it is and how to implement it. And they have three different tiers of implementation guidance. In tier one, your starting point, your basic, you know, six brick Lego block is called cyber hygiene. Cyber hygiene is things like patching, not having default creds, maybe putting in multi-factor where you're supposed to, knowing what tech is in your environment, educating your end users on not doing silly things. Like, we're not asking, okay, listen, with cyber hygiene, we're not asking for like next level malware analysis. I need a malware detonation chamber and 15, you know, security researchers from Symantec here, stat. We're going to set up a lab. We're going deep on this thing. No, just freaking set your device to auto update. Thank you for coming to my TED talk. Like, the problem is you got to be cool. You got to be cool, right? You got to be cool. You can't lose your mind with end users, okay?
Cool.
Can't lose your mind with end users. You can't lose your mind with IT staff because, you know, whatever. You got to be like that. You got to be that sage stoic person who's like, I've got the answers for you. And in reality, you're just roiling. Is that a word? Rolling? Boiling? On the inside, you're blah. And on the outside, you're like, okay, so that's what's up. All right. I'm sorry. What I just said had nothing to do with this story. Basic cyber hygiene. Yes. Like, thank you, federal governments. Thank you, Five Eyes agencies. Thank you, some of the most powerful nations in the world, for issuing guidance that we should be implementing the basic fundamental cybersecurity. The problem is, again, we've been saying put in basic cyber for years. Welcome to our industry. If you're looking to break into the industry, get ready for this. Okay, get ready to have your soul broken, because I bet you I could Google that. Like, not, I'm being slightly playful here, but I could Google this and find a story in 2000 that said the same thing. It just replaced Chinese APT Volt Typhoon with like whatever, Conti ransomware. And I could probably Google it and find it in, 2007, except instead of Volt Typhoon, it's, whatever, Cozy Bear, whatever. Like, my point is, we need to make progress, guys. Cyber hygiene. We're not asking for the world. We're asking for fundamentals, basics. Ugh.
When we think about improving efficiency in the...
All right, here we go. All right, guys. I want to say shout out to all of you and thank you very much. If you were here just for the news, hold on just one hot second. Later today, I haven't gotten confirmation from him yet, but if you're familiar with Accidental CISO, he's got an amazing, huge, funny Twitter account. This guy definitely lives it. He's going to come on and be my guest today. We're going to be talking about some of his stories from the trenches. He's got a new podcast I want to share with you. And he's just a really, really funny guy. So 4:30 p.m. Eastern time today. Right after that, remember, Slay Security Plus, Jesse Johnson will be doing the 1 hour Slay Security Plus. So if you're studying or thinking about getting it, your Security Plus certification, definitely stick for that. You're going to love it. We got Jawjack in here with DJ B-Sec in a hot minute. I just want to remind all of you that this was the Daily Cyber Threat Briefing, March 21st, episode number 583. We're just cranking here. People having a good time. I hope you enjoyed the show. I've got to roll on teaching, but we're going to make a slight transition here as we normally do. So Monica Nunez, did we tag somebody for the Simply Cyber Community Challenge? Monica Nunez, just let me know in chat, please, if we tag somebody. I would love to shout that out. All right, let's go and start pivoting into jawjacking. So we're going to kill the music. We're going to change the graphics here. This is me doing it live. Always issues. All right, we're there. And let's bring in our very own DJ B-Sec for our Thursday. Hey, B-Sec, how are you, bud?
I'm tired.
What's happening? Why are you tired? You putting out fires?
It's been a long week. You know, you go from spring break to actually working all week, you get tired.
Yeah. Well, and for those who have gray in their hair, when you go on spring break and you do bonfires and moonshine, your body, I know you 20-year-olds in chat are like, whatever, dude, I get up and I go again hard. Well, when you have gray in your hair, and ibuprofen's part of your daily diet, you don't rebound quite as quickly.
Yeah, just to get out of bed.
Well, it's great to have you, BSec. I'll leave chat. I'll leave you in the trusty hands of our very own DJ BSec. Thank you very much, everybody. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Until next time, stay secure.
All right, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started this morning with some Jaw Jacket. Well, I've got my intro. Is everybody ready? You know what time it is. It's Jaw Jacket time. All right. Go ahead, everybody, throw in those questions. Let's go ahead and get started today and see what we've got going on. Find some music. Last night I was working with somebody and I found a new playlist that I think we're all going to enjoy. Hopefully it doesn't blow everything up. And then we'll get started with some Jaw Jacket. See if I can find this real quick. And I do, so I, last week I did go through, questions that were asked afterwards. So I do have some questions that, we missed last week that, I'll go through and see if we can't answer them. Let's see. I want to find this because this was a pretty cool little. There it is. So for those of you who don't know, I guess I can say this is a Tidbits Thursday. I'm a big Zelda person, so I like to play Zelda. So I figured we'd do some lo-fi Zelda stuff for this morning. And we'll go ahead and grab questions. Okay, good question. What's a good security book? Christopher Cahill. That's a good question. I don't look at security books. I'm not a security book person. I mean, the only security books or network security books that I've read are revolving around building stuff out, like the Cisco security book, Cisco networking, CCNP. So all of that stuff. A lot of network security actually revolves around security in itself. So knowing what needs to be secure and then knowing how to secure it on the network, if that makes sense. Let me switch over here and we can see if we can find one. And we'll see what, let's see here. Jerry's saying TCP IP Illustrated Volume 3. That might be one. Let's see. I have not read network security books. So when you pull up network security, let's see. Jerry's saying the Volume 3 for TCP IP Illustrated. Let's see what that one is. There's a volume 2. I would go with volume 3 because it's the newest. Focuses on implementations. Authors use real working code. Seems like something I'd probably jump into. But yeah, when it comes to network security in itself, that'd be a pretty dull book to read, in my opinion. Trying to read a security book over networking. A lot of the networking stuff that I deal with and security is making sure we can go through and actually prevent. It's preventative, right? So IDS, IPS, anything revolving around those, that's something that that you look at, because you're looking at networks, you're looking at network protocols, you're looking at what's going on the network. A lot of the stuff is dealing with logs and firewalls and so forth. So for me, it's more along the lines of what you're trying to do on the network. How are you trying to secure it? I guess there may be a few books out here that have, the basics in there. Let me switch over here. Get chat up. All right, we've got a couple questions here. 8-bit Nintendo. No, upgrading, Jeff. I am not 8-bit NES stuff. I've been playing like Breath of the Wild. That's an older one. Tears of the Kingdom, those type of things. That's my away time. Go play some games and not think about anything and just try to run around a world and defeat bad people. Oh, let's see. Mozzabella. Hi, I just want to ask, what would be the fastest way to study ISO 27001, and where can I get the material for it? ISO 27001 is more Euro. You can get material off of Amazon. You can order ISO 27001, 27000. Let's see. There is a ISO handbook, 27001 handbook that you could probably get. The ISO controls, implementing and auditing, 93 controls. Let me put this in chat. I don't think it's going to let me put that in there. It's too long. Yeah, I would look for, let me see if I can get this to actually give me a decent link to put in here. That's not for, there we go. There's a link. I just added it to chat. That goes for the ISO controls for 27001 ISO controls. That's a good one. Let's see. What advice do you have when working with a recruiter on landing a cybersecurity job? Working with a recruiter, they're going to be doing all the heavy lifting for you. What I would say is, depending on what you're doing with the recruiter would depend on how you attack what job you're going to go for. So the recruiter is going to have jobs. Are you wanting just to take the first job, or are you wanting to actually look for a specific job and go for that? If you're doing that, that's a good way to have a recruiter go say, hey, look, I want a job in GRC, or I want a job doing pen testing, and have that recruiter spend the time to go out and find those jobs directly for you. If you're just looking for any job to break in, then just let the recruiter do what they do and find that job to land. Let's see, Mozzabella, I'm planning to go for auditor and implementer in ISO. Well, good luck on that. That's a ISO 27001 and 27000 is that's a heavy lift. Not something I ever want to deal with. Ian Michael, okay, what we got a question here. What is the best intro to NetSec? Think beginner to middle. Oh, it's been a while since I've been beginner to middle. Best intro to, so network security, if we're thinking beginner, if you say beginner in network security, then you know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that you already have know-how in networking. You already understand networking. You know what a router is. You know what a switch is. You know how to configure them. You understand enterprise networking. From that jump, then now you're looking at What are you doing to secure stuff? So in that sense, I would look at firewalls, number one, for NetSec, securing, because you want to secure that handoff, right? You want to secure the handoff from the internet to your network. Understand ACLs, understand how to run PCAPs, and understand what's in a PCAP, how to read an actual protocol, how to read a packet and understand what's going on there. There's a lot to it. Getting into it, it's something that you would probably want a mentor to help you with. It's not something that you're just going to jump in. Of course, there's tons of people out on YouTube that will go through different PCAPs and explain stuff there. I know there's Keith Barker. I know David Bomble did a whole bunch of networking stuff. Now he's more pushed on cybersecurity. But those type of people will go through and explain stuff to you, and that way you have a better understanding of what's going on in the network. The big thing with network security is understanding what controls you have on the network and understanding how to implement them, because you can implement, just like in anything with security, if you implement it wrong, you're taking everything down, right? So if you say, hey, we're going to go full board with MFA across the board and nobody has MFA set up, and you click it and turn it on, guess what? Everybody's down. Nobody can log in. And now you've created a big show for everybody, right? Christopher Gale, someone else has it, but what was it like? I'm not sure what that one was. All right, Carrie is asking, DJ Basic, did you hear about the IT guy that went to the ER? He touched the firewall. That one is funny. Okay, like PF Sense Books, been setting up VLANs in it. There you go, Christopher Cahill. Yeah. So if you're going to lab something out and try and do security, and you don't have enterprise, you don't have a way to understand, you're not going to go in and create enterprise networks, right? What I would do is set up something like PF Sense. I talked about this before a couple of weeks ago. Setting up PF Sense at home is great because you have full control over your network, number one, and it allows you to kind of get an enterprise look at the way ACLs are set up or firewall rules are set up, how you can use different routes to move information, whether or not you're using, whether or not you're pointing like Netflix through one connection and maybe Amazon Prime through another, stuff like that, if you've got backups. Becky Gaylord, best tips for getting unstuck on self-directed or self-paced hands-on labs. That and learning code is so intimate to GRC. About to study or about ready to do time. So overall, I would say best tips to getting unstuck. If you're working on a lab, that means, unless it's a lab that you've created yourself, if it's a lab that somebody's given out, then more than likely there is some write-up somewhere. Okay. I think John Hammond talked about this with Jerry. Go do the lab, do it as best you can. And once you get stuck, give yourself a time frame. Say, hey, look, I'll spend the next 2 hours trying to work this out. And if you can't work it out, then go find the write-up and look at the write-up and then walk through and understand why it is that person was able to go through it and you didn't understand it. And then what you can do there is once you've gone through it and you understand it, then go redo the lab again and do it without the walkthrough and do it by yourself. And you can continue to do that until you get to the point to where you don't get stuck at that one specific spot and you just blast through. And at that point, then you understand it and you've got it. That would be my suggestion is, go through as far as you can and then have the write-up or have where somebody else has added stuff or created it and done the labs before, go through and follow it. There's been, I'm not ashamed to say, there's been many times I've done labs, even on like Try Hack Me and stuff. I get to the point to where I'm like, I don't know what is going on here. I don't understand what we're trying to do. I know what the end goal is, but I don't know what tool I need to be using. And I sit there for 20, 30 minutes and I'm like, you know what? Head out to YouTube, type in the room for Try Hack Me. It pops up. And then I look at it and I go, you feel stupid, right? I'm like, oh man, I'm an idiot. How did I not think of that? But then you know, and then you can go through and do it and then reset the room and then redo it again. And you know, they say once you say something, do something, read something 10 times, then you understand it. So there you go. 10 times, just replay it over and over and over and you'll understand and then move on. Do you have to be an ISC member to submit your CPEs? Brian, I'm not sure what you're talking about. CPEs are for, that's continuing education. That's for any certifications that you get. Let's see, did you put that one in there? Yeah. Okay, down to earth. Should you be familiar with networking if you're going into GRC? Okay, so I've been getting a lot of questions lately about people going to GRC and whether they need to be technical or not technical. And I've been seeing a lot of people post on LinkedIn saying, hey, you need to be technical to go into GRC, or you don't need to be technical to go to GRC. I'll give my take real quick. I don't think you need to be the most technical person to walk into GRC. And this is going to depend on how you are going in or what you're doing in GRC. Okay. GRC in itself is understanding governance, risk, and controls. So to understand the risk and the controls, you have to have some type of technical background. Not necessarily background, but technical know-how. So if you don't know that a firewall does X, then how can you know that control is ever going to work? Or how can you know that the risk of not having a firewall is what it is? That's what you need to understand. You don't need to know that to get onto a firewall, that you need to have, you know, 15 rules in the firewall, and that firewall rules are from top down, and that if you don't put rule 4 before rule 5, then rule 5 is not going to work. You don't need to know all of that stuff. You need to understand the basics of what a firewall does. What does a router do? What does a switch do? What is MFA? You know, what is a SIM? You need to understand the underlying technology behind it, not just, and that will help in GRC in itself. I don't think you don't need to be that practitioner to go into GRC, but you do need to understand what that practitioner on the other side of the table has to do to make those compliances and to make those policies actually work, if that makes sense. Hopefully that makes sense. All right, Ian Michael is asking, which OSI model is best? Which OSI model? As far as I know, there's only one OSI model. In your opinion, to understand where threats come from and how they penetrate and what kind of attacks on which layer. All right, so there's a big thing between OSI model and TCPI model. Let me pull this up. See if we can see this. There we go. All right. So I'm gray in the hair. And when I started networking, both of these models were there, but the big thing was OSI model. OSI model, OSI, 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 right? The OSI model breaks down the stack more than the TCP/IP model, and you can see that, right? So this application layer in itself are these top three. You've got network access down here with a physical and data link. You've got network. So this is layer one. You always hear about what layer is it in, right? Layer one, layer two, layer three. Here, let me see if we can't do this right here. There we go. And so we've got layer one here. We've got layer two here. Uh-oh. I think... Oh, no, there. Okay, we got layer one here, layer two here, layer three here, layer four, five, six, and seven. So you always hear about the different layers. We got layers one, two, three, four. You don't hear that, oh, we have layer one, layer two, layer three, and the top layer is level four. So everybody speaks about it in the OSI, realm, right? So everything is OSI. So you hear a layer when you're talking about firewalls, we're talking about layer seven, like a layer six or layer five. We're not talking about layer four, just the application layer with everything's underneath it. For me to understand and dive deeper, I understand the OSI model. That's what I was taught. That's where I go. I know a lot of people are like, no, we only need to know TCP/IP. And here's what I would say. If you are not a networking person, and you don't need to deal with networking all the time, go for the TCP/IP model. Okay? Don't worry about the OSI. OSI would be more of those network engineers that need to understand what's going on at each individual layer. Because when I get called about an issue on the network, that's what I'm looking at. Is it a layer one issue? Like, is it physically the computer itself? Is it the network card itself? Is it a layer two? Did somebody not plug something in? Is it a layer three? Is it along the is it along the routing, right? Or is it along the transport in layer four? So understanding the OSI model as a networker, yes. As somebody in security, maybe not necessarily need to go in. I think John Strand talks about this, that you should just worry about TCP/IP. And to me, yeah, that works, because in security, TCP/IP, all you need to worry about is that it's the application layer. Doesn't matter that it's the specific layer seven or so forth, because on the networking side, when you get into firewalls and routing, you actually are dealing with, depending on what's going on, different specific layers. Hopefully that makes sense. All right. If you could get one cert for database admin, what would you get? Pamela Joshua. I don't even know what certs are out there for database admins. That's a interesting one. I've never looked at databases. I don't really work with databases. One of the individuals that I work with daily is a database administrator. He doesn't have any certs, but he is extremely well versed in databases. Let's see. I'm not sure. I've never really looked at database certifications. For me, I know a lot of things are running off SQL or MySQL. So anything revolving around SQL certifications is probably going to be your best one. And that's what I would go with. Yeah, Live Beats is saying which. I mean, yeah. So for me, I would say anything revolving around SQL would be what I'm would be what I would go for. If I was doing something database wise, that's where I would go. Let's see, Angular's got in here. OSI offers more granularity for the full stack. TCP model is good for networking. Oh, wait, that's what you just said. Yeah, exactly. This is the same thing, right? So OSI model is all the way down there, breaks it down. And then you got TCP/IP. Is just a couple. Let's see. We've got somebody from, I can't say this name, Agaje Tinjo. The TCP/IP came first as a definition. This was originally focused on the web protocols only. OSI came later to stratify TCP/IP to extend beyond just the web protocol and make a universal model. So Giovanni is asking, is SQL useful in cybersecurity side of things? So understand, when it comes to cybersecurity, understanding how a database works is 100% on the cybersecurity side of things. You can you need to understand what SQL injection means, what can be done. Like, if you write this query, what's going to happen? If you expose this database to a website that allows people to look stuff up, is that going to then have the ability to have SQL injection and have somebody look at the whole thing? You need to understand how to obfuscate stuff within a database. I mean, there's a lot to databases in general. So yes, understanding SQL is useful, or having somebody on your team that understands it and that you can talk to them and say, hey, look, we need to make sure XYZ is not happening, and they can go in and do that. All right, Angular, see ya. Gotta go to work. Ross, I would. Yeah. So exactly what Ross just said. I would argue that SQL language is useful in general. And that being said, not just SQL, if you learn SQL and you understand and learn how the queries are running or how to write a query, it's kind of the same across the board. KQL, all the other types of different ones. Yeah, there's another great comment. Data at rest encryption is primarily cyber control directly administered. So I would say yes and no, that is directly administered by admins. With what we have today, with all of the network attack storages or the storage attack SANs or NANs or NAS, a lot of those now are actually have data encrypted at rest automatically in the system itself. So if you're running and putting a database on there, granted, you'd have to have somebody come in, steal your whole NAS or your whole SAN and run out of your data center with it because it's at rest, right? What you need to make sure is that data on the line itself is encrypted. All right, I did have somebody ask last week, and I don't know if they're here or not, but they asked, what do you use defanging for? And I think we were talking about sending out an email or something within phishing message. What I wanted to do is make sure that everybody understood what defanging is. So I want to bring this up real quick. You can use a program called CyberChef, which I'm sure a whole bunch of you and everybody knows what CyberChef is, but I want to make sure everybody understands that defanging just means that you're making the URL or the IP address or whatever it is that you're sending over to somebody not clickable. So for instance, if I put in HTTP into CyberChef, move my mic out of the way and then I can type. Google.com. If I say, hey, I want to defang this, you can see that my input is this. And if I sent this in an email, then that would be clickable. What you want to do is you want to say, hey, I want to defang this. This is defanging. It will put brackets around here and it will remove this. That way you can send this link off to somebody in an email or in any type of message, and that defangs it. So it removes, you know, just like a vampire. You have the fangs, or a snake, you have those fangs. If you defang it, it can't hurt you. And that's basically what defanging is. That can't hurt that person, so you're able to send that out. So if somebody got a bad email and then you wanted to send it out to the company and say, hey, look, here's how we make sure that we don't click on this stuff, and you can send it and say, hey, this was what was in the last email, and this was a bad URL, you can send that out. Same thing for IP addresses and so forth. Okay, let's see. Carrie, what do we got here? Is there a way to use my lab experience once I am done with Cyber 101 to get a job? I couldn't get anywhere with the local college for a bachelor's degree. Is there any way to use your lab experience? Well, yeah, do with those lab experiences, create write-ups and put stuff out there. Carrie, you need to create a GitHub. You need to put information out there, put stuff out. I know you're always on LinkedIn. I see you on there. Put stuff out on LinkedIn of the write-ups of the labs that you're doing. That way people see and understand that you're actually doing the work. I think everybody says that. Make sure you're putting the information out there that's showing you're doing the work. Yes, Cyber Hamburger, 100% dark mode. I want to be able to see when I'm 80. I don't need all of the bright lights. All right, Matthew Netchy, let's see what we got here. In your opinion, what is the best, easiest to understand reference for networking and subnetting? Oh, man, I've had this question a lot. Study. In all honesty, so it just depends on what you're needing it for. Do you need to you need to understand subnetting and what subnetting does? If you're going to take a test, then of course you're going to have to possibly break stuff down. But you don't need to understand what every single subnet is. You don't need to understand how many hosts or how many IP addresses are in a /16 or a /17 or an 18 or a 19. You don't need to know any of that information in real life. Now, you might need it for the test, for a test. You don't need it in real life. I use subnet cal online. It's quick, it's easy, and I don't have to sit here and try and rack my brain about how many IP addresses I need. What you'll find when you're in the real world and you're with a company is a lot of companies or a lot of places use the same type of subnets. So you begin to understand that, hey, in a /24 subnet, there's gonna be 254 hosts. And a /20, and you know, a 23, you're gonna go, what, 512, right? And then you understand, like, oh, if I go with this IP, or if I go with this company, they're only giving me, they'll ask you, how many IP addresses do you want? How many external IP addresses do you want? They're not gonna give you a 24 subnet. But you say, hey, well, you know, if it's a 32, then I'd only get one, right? But if it's a 30, then I'm gonna get two addresses. So maybe I need, depending on how many hosts that you want to, or how many things you want to put out to the internet, you might need a couple of IP addresses. So you can put in there, hey, I want a /28, and you get 16 addresses. So from a standpoint of needing to 100% understand and know subnetting, you don't need to know it in that sense. You need to understand, for the test, you'll need to understand it, but we don't have people that are just sitting here cranking out subnets all day long. And if they are, they're using a calculator or they've got it memorized because they're doing it daily. Let's see, what else have we got in here? Question, what book to learn? What is a good book to learn networking? Jazzy Jeff, a good book to learn networking, I would say would be for me, I did everything through Cisco. So, you know, CCNA, go through, read that. You can do Network Plus. I think Network Plus is more agnostic. CCNA is going to be, of course, directly at Cisco. If you are just getting into networking, 100% start with Network Plus so you understand the basics of Network Plus, or you understand the basics of networking. And Michael. Got Nightbot in here. Let's see who else. What is that subnet count? I don't know which subnet count you're talking about. Subnetting. Trying to go through, we had any questions in here. But yeah, I see everybody's talking about subnetting. This is a topic right on time. I'm studying for CCNA as well. Michael Jordan, straight off the straight off the court and into CCNA. Career change. Basketball does. Basketball and networking. It's all about the nets, right? All right. We are at 8:33 right now as it is. There you go, Cider Notation. Understanding what Cider Notation is. I am going to go. We're going to wrap up, and I'm going to go ahead and I can't start my day. You said a website for something. Oh, Jazzy J, the website. Let me pull that up here real quick before we take off. So you got subnet calculator, and that's all this is. Let's see if I can make it bigger. See, you can run it. You have to understand what class you're working with, right? So class A, class B, or class C. So like if I wanted to say, hey, I'm going to have a class A. Well, the website doesn't want me to do anything on it. There we go. If I'm going to say I have a class A, like a 10.1 network, you definitely need to understand classes because that will also depend on what your mask bits are. But so say we have our 192 network and then somebody's going to give us something. We can always come in here and say, hey, here's my subnet, or you can say my mask. Say, oh, they're going to give me a 28. And then now what does it do? Now it goes and tells you, hey, this is what it is. You can have 14 hosts on that subnet. So this is a quick and easy tool. And it shows you the subnet map, subnet bitmap at the bottom as well. So it's amazing. Great tool. All right. It is 8:35. Let me run through here real quick. Said subnet. There we go. Kimberly. I think we've got all of the questions out of the way. I did the defanging. All right, everybody, let's go ahead and run this last roll. It's been a long day and I'm tired. It's only 8:35 and I'm tired. I was cleaning out, I was cleaning out the storeroom and found cases upon cases of the material. Oh yeah, CCNA. Yeah, I think back here in my little bookshelf, I've got all of those. Hey, you know what? This right here is a great comment. Before I taught subnetting for a few years before I fully understand it. You have to be 100% just enveloped in subnetting to understand it. So that is, if you want to learn it, go and, or if you want to understand it 100% completely, go start a group and then teach it, or teach it to somebody, man. Create content online, dump out some YouTube videos about subnetting so you can understand it more. And then if we know how the world is, right? So if you do it wrong, somebody's going to tell you, and you can go back and you learn. All right, that's going to be me for today. Thank you for everybody hanging around. We are going to drop off. Let's not forget that we've got Jerry today at 4:30 Eastern with a fireside chat, I believe, with Accidental CIS, CISO. I think he said he's got to make sure that he's that's still good, but everybody look for that one. And then tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, you've got Slay Security with Jesse J going over your Sec Plus. Hopefully we see everybody tomorrow for the Friday last the last version for the week of the Simply Cyber Threat Briefing. There you go, Kim. Thank you for dropping all of my different ones. I should give you my, I think I've got a link that's got everything on there. But that's going to be it for me today. I will see everybody tomorrow morning for the threat brief. Until then, everybody stay secure.
you enjoyed that content. Keep the cybersecurity train going by connecting with the other Simply Cyber community resources. We have the Discord server that's lively and always keeps the conversation going. You can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And also every single weekday morning on the Simply Cyber channel, we're doing live daily cyber threat briefings, 8 a.m. Eastern time, as well as Thursday at 4:30 p.m. We're doing live stream interviews with industry experts, and we produce videos that we push out every Wednesday morning. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. I hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you in the next one.